Hello, all of you listeners for An Unexpected Fight, a pediatric cancer podcast. I know it's been a while since we've been on and had an episode. Life's been a bit crazy lately, but I have a very exciting guest for you today. I have with me Miranda Walker and her mom, Amber, and she is one of our cancer warriors, and I wanted to highlight her story and talk about what it's like from a cancer patient who fought and has won her battle and is currently in observation. So I'm going to let her mom, Amber, tell her story.
In 2021, Miranda got strep throat, and then she got the flu, and this was all right before Thanksgiving, and she just wasn't getting better. And Miranda is our child who was never sick. I can recall maybe 2 to 3 times before this that she had been sick ever. So the fact that she just wasn't getting better, something told me in my gut that something was wrong. And so I remember over the Thanksgiving holiday, I told my husband that Monday when everybody went back to school, that I was going to take Miranda to the doctor and that I was going to let her doctor know that something was wrong and ask them to do blood work or more tests or something. And so I took her to the doctor that Monday. It was November 28th of 2021. And her doctor did blood work and she suggested that maybe Miranda had mono, because she also felt like it was kind of strange that Miranda wasn't getting better, so we definitely felt like maybe it had turned into something else. And she told me that they would send the lab work off and they would call us with the results, and that would be that. And so the next morning, we had kept Miranda home from school Tuesday, November 29th, and I remember my phone ringing at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was asleep. And so I saw that it was the pediatric clinic, and I answered the phone. And I think that I kind of knew as soon as I answered the phone that something was wrong because it wasn't a nurse or a receptionist on the other end of the phone. It was Miranda's doctor. And she let me know that the outside lab had just called her and that we needed to head to Arkansas Children's Hospital, about an hour away from where we live, as soon as possible. And that they thought that Miranda probably had leukemia. And so I let her kind of finish what she was saying. There wasn't really much more for her to say. And I remember going out to where my husband was at, and bless his heart, he was on a video appointment. And I just walked into the room, just bawling my eyeballs out. He could probably barely understand what I was saying. And so he got off of his appointment. We went outside and kind of gathered ourselves. And at that point, Miranda was still asleep. We let her continue to sleep. And then we went in and we started packing. And it was kind of at that point that Miranda started to wake up. And we told her that she could come in our room, that we needed to tell her something. And so she came in our room, and I told her that we were going to go to Arkansas Children's Hospital, and that there was a possibility that she had cancer. And we were told to prepare for a couple of days at the hospital. And so I remember the look on Miranda's face was just a look of shock. And there were
Did
some.
you, Miranda, did you know what cancer was and what that meant for you at that point in time, or is that something that you'd never really been exposed to or thought about?
I kind of knew about it because they talk about it in school, but I didn't know too much. It's like I didn't know it was all different.
So my grandpa had passed away a few years before from kidney cancer. And so I think that it probably just was associated with immediate death, that there wasn't too much knowledge for her at the time of that there were different kinds of cancers and different kinds of treatment and all of that kind of stuff.
I just think whenever I was young, whenever I was Miranda's age, I did not know anything about cancer. Mm-hmm. I'd never had a family member with cancer. And so to me, it may not have sounded that scary, but for someone who had recently had a family member diagnosed, I can imagine that that was very scary.
I remember
time for you guys.
I remember her eyes. She didn't cry as in like any noises or any kind of movements or anything. I just remember her eyes filling up with tears and just watching tears kind of stream down her face with just a look of just shock. And so we went to Arkansas Children's Hospital. And she actually, we have some pretty goofy pictures from that first day in the emergency room. There was constant people in and out because, you know, of course, our doctor had called ahead and let them know why we were coming. And so there was already wheels turning. But that first hospital stay that we planned for a couple of days turned into 39 consecutive days, just that hospital stay. Over the course of her active treatment, which if I'm remembering correctly was about 7 months. So it's like 170 something days. And we spent over 150 of them in the hospital. So for a long time, for Miranda and I, the hospital felt more like home than home felt like home because we were never there. And during those first couple of days, it was, you know, I remember in the ER making the doctor, like, I told him, like, you have to say it because he's saying these things that are like alluding to the fact that Miranda has cancer. But the words Miranda has leukemia, those words hadn't come out of his mouth yet. And I remember him telling us, you know, you're going to go upstairs, you're going to get this test and that test. And I remember just looking at him and just saying, I need you to say it. I need you to say it out loud. And he said, Miranda has leukemia. And so from that point, it was a matter of finding out what kind of leukemia Miranda had and her course of treatment. And Miranda ended up having AML, which is acute myeloid leukemia. And it is the less common leukemia found in children, but it is the more aggressive form. And so you have to hit it really hard right away.
So Miranda, what did you think about those first few days in the hospital? What all do you remember?
I don't remember much. I just remember going to the ER and then we got there. I remember wearing a green shirt, and then I ate all my food, we went up there, and that's about it. I don't remember too much, at least from the first hospital stay.
Do you remember being scared, or were you just kind of in shock, or what did your friends think? Were you able to talk to your friends while you were in the hospital?
I don't think we told them until, like, a little bit later.
No, girl. This girl's lying to you, too.
Oh!
Shit! She was FaceTiming her friends from the ER, nonchalant lying. I'm in the ER. I have cancer. And I think at that point, it hadn't really set in for her. And her friends are just like, you're lying. And she's like,
you're lying.
No, I'm not lying. And she would, like, pan out and show them the hospital room and her dad and I sitting there and she's like, see, at the hospital, I have cancer. I was like, Miranda, you could have like gave it to them gently. Like
they needed to know.
That's true. They did need to know. We didn't get to know gently, so I guess
We didn't want to tell like the school and then have the school tell them.
That's true. I do remember when we initially got to the emergency room, Miranda's hemoglobin, you know, of course, at the time, I didn't know what was a good hemoglobin and what was a bad hemoglobin until later.
I didn't know what hemoglobin was.
Yeah. I remember finding out that Miranda's hemoglobin was 4. And I was like, well, that's what pretty, is it supposed to be?
Pretty awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember now that she's doing a lot better, it's like 13. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, those first couple of days, once we got upstairs and she got some blood in her, she really was feeling a lot better than what she had been at home, because a lot of her physical symptoms at that point in time were because she needed blood products. Oh, I remember I was going to say that she'd been diagnosed with AML. I think I was where I was about to say how many treatments she needed.
So when y'all got Miranda's diagnosis, then you found out Miranda's got AML, and so what now? What did the doctors tell you, and what was going through your head at that point in time?
So initially, it was going to be, the standard course of treatment was 5 rounds of chemo. And they were all inpatient. Growing up, you know, I had heard a lot about people having to go back and forth from here to there, or, you know, taking chemo pills, or, you know, just different situations. And that wasn't what it was going to be for Miranda. It was going to be inpatient, 5 rounds of chemo. And I remember when some more tests came back later in the journey, we did find out that Miranda was LR1, which is low risk 1, and actually meant that she only had to do 4 rounds of chemo. And so we were excited about that. We kind of had got an idea that maybe it would take 6 months or so to complete treatment. But they had also told us that we should expect setbacks. We had setbacks from the very, very beginning. Miranda's very first central line got infected in less than 24 hours and had to come out. And I believe she had a total of 5 between central lines and
pick lines.
Yes. I think we had a total of 5 because they all got infected and would have to come out. And so we spent more time in the hospital than a lot of, typically with AML treatment, what they had told us was that first round, you're going to stay in the hospital. The actual treatment of chemo, I want to say, was 5 to 7 days, but then you would stay in the hospital for count recovery, which would be when everything would come back to kind of normal for them to be ready to give you chemo again. And then after that second round of chemo, we went home, and that didn't go very well for us. We barely lasted 7 days at home before we were right back in the hospital with another infection. And so from there, we would just stay through the end, like stay through the whole cycle of chemo. And then they would give her like a week or two at home to rest before we would go back for another round of chemo. One of the scariest hospital stays was actually after she was completely done with chemo. It was after that 4th round of chemo, and we went home, and she had actually been at clinic that morning, and she was fine, no fever or anything. And that night, we were about between midnight and 2 a.m. We ended up back in the emergency room, and Miranda doesn't remember anything past throwing up right before we walked into the emergency room. She doesn't remember anything. You remembered something before that?
We walked in, and I remember throwing up, and then I went to sleep, and then I woke up again, and we were, like, in the emergency room, and then I threw up again, and okay. Then I go back to sleep, and then I remember passed out.
That's right. And so then there's a three-day period of time that Miranda actually ended up in the ICU in very critical condition. And it wasn't until after we were back on the hematology oncology unit that I realized how serious it was for that unit to send somebody to the emergency room. I didn't realize that 90% of the things that that unit can do, other units can't necessarily do, but there's just a couple of things that they can't do that they'll have to send you to the emergency room. And I think that it was a good thing that I didn't know those things until we got back, because that's when it really set in, like, how serious it was that she was in the emergency room. But she'll tell you some funny stories of that time in the emergency room from once she did start to come around.
I have two, like, favorite parts from that stay. The first one is, I thought it was really cool that I could tell that I had a fever.
That was really cool.
That was awesome.
I remember she just the yucky feeling that she would get. I remember she actually called me.
Call you guys.
Mm-hmm, she like, called me.
I need help.
She called me on the telephone from her bedroom, and she said, I think I have a fever. And sure enough, she had a fever. What was the other thing?
The other thing is the hallucinations, because those are really funny. But the one, like, with the girl that was in the other room, was, like, talking through the bathroom, that was not my jam. I didn't like that.
So did you know when you were having the hallucinations that they weren't real, or could you not tell that they were real, or you knew that they weren't real, but you still were seeing them and hearing them anyway?
I feel like the third one, which was like these dancing people, I feel like I knew that one wasn't real, but it was at the same time.
Yeah.
But like the first one with the girl, I didn't know that that wasn't real because, like, my mom heard me talking to her. I actually talked to her.
She was getting really upset because I'm like, Miranda, who are you talking to? What are you even talking about? And so once she realized that, like, I was confused, that would just make her mad. And she's like, right there, the person over there. And I remember what scared the heck out of me was the nurse came in, and I was like, Miranda was like trying to talk to the person in the other room. She said they were talking to her, and the look on the nurse's face looked like she saw a ghost, because she looked at me and she said, there is nobody in that room. And I was like, oh my gosh.
It was like there was a bathroom connecting to the other room, and there was this baby that's having a lung transplant, but it was like my dad's niece. Mm-hmm. It was her. And she was annoying us, I guess. I remember Dad was there. Wasn't he there?
Not that day, no. Not when this happened.
I remember him being there, and like I would talk to her, but I guess I wasn't really talking to her. And then I guess, like, you told me to ignore her, and she kept saying, like, sorry through the bathroom, because they're, like, connected. The bathrooms were connected, and she was saying sorry for annoying us, and I was trying to tell you, like, just ignore her. It's fine. It wasn't fine.
I remember she had just had one of her lines taken out, and we were trying to take a nap, and I remember her, all of a sudden, she's talking to somebody, and she's like, Mom, they're here to take me. And they said that they have to take my new line out. And I said, no, tell them we're not doing that. And so she did. She said, we're not doing that. I was like, tell them we're taking a nap. So she said, we're taking a nap. And then she went back to sleep. But I remember when we were up on 4K, they had like these where they kept like the dirty linen so you could get to it from either side of the hallway. And so that kind of cabinet is where she swears that specific nurses came out dancing.
A blonde one with glasses, and then a brunette one.
And they glasses. Had like
the yellow thing.
The on. Yellow like PPE equipment. Yeah, and she could tell you all about it. But it never happened.
Well, and I'll say that we make light of very scary for you both, you know, seeing your child, hearing things and seeing things that aren't there. And then for you thinking things that were there and they weren't. But, you know, it's like we can laugh about it now, but during the time, I'm sure it's really scary. Another thing I remember vividly whenever Nora was in the hospital is signing those consent forms after they read you this laundry list of things that could happen. So mm-hmm. tell me kind of what you felt going through, you know, signing the consents for chemo and these treatments that are, you know, 70 years old.
Well, I remember Miranda was eligible for a clinical trial. And I remember they brought me this big binder of stuff. And I remember actually sending some of it to you and asking you if it was something that we should do. And I remember, you know, talking to my husband and kind of going back and forth. And ultimately, it came down to this clinical trial being the same drugs as their standard treatment, just a different mixture that is supposed to be less harsh on the heart in the long run. And so we ended up signing that we would be willing to be placed in the lottery, and she did get put on that clinical trial. But I remember Johnny, my husband, just kind of looking at me, you know, and you and I have had this conversation before of like, what choice do you have? That's the option that you're being given, and knowing that there's already, now that the cancer word has been put into play, that already brings those thoughts of there's already a possibility that my child can die from this. So what choice do I have? I give them this poison that might make them better, but it could also kill them, or I just sit here and do nothing. And so ultimately, we went with what we kind of felt, I guess, was the lesser of two evils.
What do you think was, like, your least favorite part? Because I have a least favorite part, but what was yours?
I think first of all, having to be away from your dad and your brother for such long periods of time. But I really think it was that time in the ER, not the ER, the ICU. And I'm really glad that you don't remember some of that.
I remember watching that on Facebook and mm-hmm. praying and hoping that everything was going to turn out the way it was supposed to, yeah. because that is such a scary, critical time. And you've got all these people in and out and a nurse watching you 24/7. Mm-hmm. And
I remember just calling Johnny one day and just being like, I just need you here. Like, I don't care if you come and you lay on this couch and you sleep all day. I just need you here with me. But Miranda has a favorite person on IV team who, every time that she goes to clinic, he draws her labs after there was a issue with her having to get poked 3 times. Now she's like, nobody but this person is taking my labs. And she doesn't remember the reason that he knows her so well is from that ICU stay. And her being so combative and having to have 4 of us trying to hold her down so that we could get a line. And then we needed another line. And then, you know, it really got to the point where I'm the one that said, can you call IV team? Because you're trying to put a line in her foot and you're trying to put it in this hand and this arm and you're not getting it. And she doesn't know what's going on at that point. She has no recollection of any of this. And at one point, she was telling them not to put it in her hand. And they did. And she kind of remembers this now. But she wasn't happy about it because she's like, I told you not to do that.
It failed because the line mm-hmm. in my hand rolled.
Yes.
Well, and you move your hand and arm. Yes. And it's just a terrible place for IVs, especially someone that doesn't know what they're doing. But what was your least favorite part of the whole thing?
My least favorite part was the start, like the first central line, because I know that I told them at least 20 times that it hurt over and over, and no one would listen to me. And then it got infected.
This is true. I feel bad about this because, you know, that's right at the very beginning. We don't know what we're doing. We've never had a child with a central line. We don't know how much pain she's supposed to be in, how much pain she's not supposed to be in. And I remember those days, it was only a day or two after, I remember her just like clutching that part of her chest. And I have pictures of her. You'll see her with her hand, and she was very guarded of that spot. And then a couple of days later, when they said that it was infected, she was big mad. She's like, I've been telling y'all, I've told you.
I told you guys, I told the nurses, I told the doctors over and over, and no one would listen to me. They're like, that's normal. This amount of pain was not normal.
Yeah. And, you know, I have guilt when it comes to things like that, but, you know, I didn't know. I didn't know how much pain she's supposed to be in. And so, you know, we would tell the nurses, and then we could only go based off of what they're saying.
One of my favorite quotes that after Nora passed is, you know, any cancer parent struggles with guilt, whether it be they didn't get diagnosed soon enough, that something went on in the hospital that, you know, we wish we could have controlled, or just any number of things. But it's a quote from Maya Angelou that says, you have to forgive yourself for what you didn't know before you knew it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that rings true in so many different aspects of people's life. You have to forgive yourself for not knowing what you didn't know.
Yeah. I know, you know, we actually just passed this past November, the 1 year mark. And I remember, leading up to that point, I would see like those pictures of Miranda when she wasn't feeling good before. And I got to a point where I had to stop looking at them because I felt like, you know, should I have taken her to the doctor sooner? Would anything have been different if I did? And, you know, everybody's story has a different outcome. Miranda's journey seemed to be a lot longer than a lot of people's, but she's also had a better outcome than we could have ever hoped for. And we are eternally grateful for that. And, you know, we've made some incredible connections with other cancer families and nurses. Miranda was quite the night owl on the HEMOC floor. And they would have, she said she was the favorite. They would have just dance battles in her room. And I remember Miranda wasn't real fond of male nurses. There was one male tech that she would let come in her room. Other than that, she didn't really want a male nurse. And she would make sure that mom and dad made that known. But she had a favorite female night shift nurse. And I remember one night, that they have a program at Arkansas Children's, like a residency program, where the nurses kind of get to test out different departments and figure out where they fit in best. And I remember one night there was a male nurse working with Miranda's favorite nurse. But because he was with Miranda's favorite nurse, she was okay with him, you know, being there to take care of her. And we really loved him, but he was dead set that he was going to be a CVICU nurse. And, you know, we kept telling him that he would be great as a HEMOC nurse. Oh, it's the ICU for heart patients. But anyway, so we just really clicked with him, and he ended up, long story short, he is now a HEMOC nurse. And I remember he was nominated for some kind of award. And the person, I got to read like the nomination, and the person in the nomination, without stating Miranda's name, we knew they were talking about Miranda because they said how this male nurse, this was a patient who didn't like male nurses, but this male nurse clicked with her and they would play Just Dance, and he quickly became the requested nurse if he was there.
You tried to bribe me.
That's not true.
Yes, you did.
So him and Miranda's favorite nurse had a pretty healthy competition of which one of them was going to come out as the top favorite when this was all over. And he ended up bringing Miranda a Lego set. And so Miranda says he bribed her so that he could sneak up to that top spot. But he really just, I remember telling him, like, thank you for allowing God to know you were set on going somewhere else. God clearly had other ideas, and I am so grateful for that, because he's incredible at it. He probably would have been incredible wherever he went, but it really takes a special person to be a oncology nurse, as I'm sure you know, but especially a pediatric oncology nurse. And so really, those are some of the positive things that we really try to talk about. And we just had clinic the other day and went up to visit, and Miranda saw one of her favorite day shift nurses, and the look on that nurse's face, and you know, now that they get to see her with her hair growing back and the color back in her face and just have those, make some good memories with them, has been really special.
Can totally relate to the nurse who you guys said wanted to do something else and ended up doing oncology.
Yeah.
Totally my story too. So, you know, it's definitely a calling. And I think that a lot of people like myself probably don't know that they would enjoy oncology because they've never been exposed to it. So
I assume that it'd be something scary to think about because all you think about are the bad things. But, you know, these nurses became our friends. Like, they would sit there and, you know, even just me as mom, they would sit there and they would just listen to me about whatever had happened, you know, specifically our favorite nurses. We would talk to them about what had happened while they had been off.
There were like good days and there were bad days, but I feel like one of the hardest days was the last day before I went to pick you, but like when I was going home, and it was the day that we were in the hospital, and like all of my favorite nurses, they came together and we were playing all these games. So like my one favorite nurse came in early. Now, she's a night shift nurse, but she came in early. So then we could say goodbye.
We were hoping and praying that that was really going to be Miranda's last hospital stay. And the love that these nurses showed to Miranda, they cried, they prayed with us. But they sat there for hours and played games with her in hopes that that was going to be the last time that they were going to be playing these games with her. And like she said, we almost refused to leave until her night shift nurse got there. And, she ended up coming in, I think, over an hour early, but we could have gone home hours earlier, but we weren't leaving until we made sure that we got to see her. And so we've got some pictures of Miranda and her three of her four favorite nurses just sitting there on the bed playing games. And it was a bittersweet feeling when we left. Miranda's favorite night shift nurse, Miranda was her first patient that she walked through from the beginning of treatment until the end of treatment. So it was a bittersweet feeling for her as well. And she's a baby. I think this was her first job. She had just graduated maybe like a year before this. But we made some good connections. And I think that those were the things that really helped Miranda with those hospital stays, because child life is great. Miranda had anything and everything she wanted to do. She had it, games, toys. We had, our Amazon Fire Stick so she could watch anything she wanted to watch, but it's not the same as having that human interaction and being an hour away and your friend's parents having to work, and it's not that easy for them to just bring your friends to come and visit.
Didn't we watch like multiple shows multiple times?
We watched Young Sheldon, the whole series, multiple times. But I remember we watched Grey's Anatomy from beginning to end.
Ooh, love that.
But we would leave it on, like it would play even while we were asleep. And so, yes. And so it would the doctors.
Good choice, ladies. I'm loving it.
They would come in to do rounds and they would be like, you're still watching this? And we're like, oh yeah, 24/7. It's on all the time. 24/7. They would get kind of sucked into it. And before they knew it, they were like, oh, we have to move on to the next one.
So, you know, one thing that is harder to talk about is, you know, now that you're in remission, do you feel scared that your cancer is going to come back? You know, I know that a couple of girls that you went through treatments with, their cancers have relapsed and they're doing well, fortunately, thank God. But is that something you worry about? I know as a mom, that's something that Amber and I have discussed many times. So y'all tell me a little bit about y'all's thoughts on that.
I only feel like it might come back on bad days. Like when I'm sick or like I feel a fever, I get scared that it came back. Or like when I have to take pills for certain things, I get scared that it came back. So it's only on bad days. But on good days where I'm laying in bed and relaxing, I feel perfectly fine. Like nothing's wrong. It's never going to come back. Like the world is happy and there's no cancer ever again.
And you recently got to do your Make-A-Wish trip, and it looked like y'all had so much fun, but you got to go in a room where they had all the stars. Your mom sent me a picture of where you got to leave your name. So tell me about that and how that room made you feel.
That was way too many. It was like probably over 100.
I believe that it was over 180,000.
Yeah, well, at least over 100.
Absolutely.
So over 2 is too many. So over like 100,000 is way too many. It should have never been like that.
And so what do you feel whenever you know that the government only spends 4% of their funding to make new treatments for kids with cancer?
Tiffany is going to get her fired up.
I hate the government. Not trying to be rude, but I hate them. Like, why would you do that? Like, an adult has lived their life. A kid should never get their life taken away because the government is stingy and only wants to give money to the adults and not to the kids. That's not fair.
She got really fired up during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and she was like, you know, I'm not saying that people who have had breast cancer don't deserve recognition as well. She's like, but what about us? And she would get so frustrated because Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month, as well as Leukemia Awareness, is in September, and you see nothing.
No one says anything. That's not fair. It never should be like that.
What happens when you get into October?
Oh.
Everything turns pink, huh?
Oh.
Yeah,
even sometimes before, I noticed some stuff at Walmart. It was the very end of September, and I wanted to fall my eyes out with the pink. And so I decided in October, and breast cancer survivors, I love you guys. Breast cancer fighters, I love you guys. And I'm sorry that if you haven't, you know, if you know somebody that lost their battle with breast cancer. But the thing is all cancers matter, and the government funding 96% of their funds to adults is just not fair. Yeah. And it's not right. And these kids are getting decades old treatment that cause these late term side effects. And on average, over 40 chronic illnesses per child per disease state are diagnosed as they age. And they typically live 10 to 20 years less of a life expectancy because of the treatments that they received in their childhood. And while that's not always true, and the more chemo you get, the worse it is, and, you know, the different diagnosis, the worse it is. But, you know, I think that being forced to give our children these type of drugs are, it's not fair to the kids, and it's not fair to the adults having to sign the consent for that.
I remember one of the hardest conversations that we had to have at the beginning of Miranda's treatment was what the chemo meant for Miranda's future if she wanted to become a mom. And I remember them, she doesn't remember this, and I'm thankful for that, but they did send in an OBGYN there at Children's Hospital to talk to us. And thankfully, there wasn't anything that we needed to do at that time for Miranda. But there is a friend of Miranda's who has relapsed, who had to have one of her ovaries, I believe, removed and frozen, or a fallopian, something like that, mm-hmm. to preserve so that she could be able to have kids in the future if she wanted to. And those are the harsh realities that these kids deal with. You know, these girls are anywhere, the three that we've been talking about are anywhere from 10 to 12 years old. And, you know, them and their families are having to think about if they're going to be able to have kids when they're an adult because of what they're having to go through right now. And I know that for Miranda, you know, we've talked about this before. A lot of people, if you've never, it's something that you don't know what it feels like until you're in it. And I can't explain it to somebody who's never been through it and make them get it, because you're not going to get it. But because Miranda has been through it, she does have a passion now for pediatric cancer and making a change. And I'm hoping that, you know, she will keep that fire and continue to fight to make change.
I have seen, like, all these pageant shows, and these pageant coaches are getting mad because these pageant girls are not saying anything real. Like, for on-stage interview, they'll be like, say something real, say something that matters to you. If I would have to do that, it'd be like, where the questions would be in 2067, what would you want the world to be like then? Like, I don't want cancer to be a thing anymore. That shouldn't have to be like that. They should find a way to stop it. Like, they're finding a way to cure it, but they're not finding a way to stop it. It shouldn't be like that.
I agree.
I also agree. And I hope that with this platform that we have here in this podcast to share these stories and raise awareness for kids who have dealt with cancer and the ones that are going to deal with cancer, because trust me, you never know when it's going to be you. You don't have to have a family history. You don't have to know anybody with cancer. And trust me, it can sneak up on you at any moment and any time. So those of you who think to yourself, well, you know, this has never affected me and it's not going to affect me, I can promise you 6,000% that you do not know that. And you do not know if your child is going to be the one that hears the words, you have cancer. So I beg you to talk to your local legislators to vie for pediatric cancer funding, because it isn't fair and it isn't right.
I think the other thing that is so important that I did not realize is how important it is to donate blood or blood products if you can. I know I've talked to my grandma. My grandma's been donating, I would probably say over 50 years. She's a regular donator. And I, you know, up until Miranda got sick, I was like, oh, good for you. I'm glad that you, you know, enjoy doing it. Good for you. Why would I ever want to do that? And then Miranda got sick, and in total, she needed, I want to say, 56 blood transfusions and around 36 platelet transfusions. And if she didn't get those, you know, she would have died. And going through that with her was when it really hit me, like, especially, you know, I am lucky enough to be able to be a platelet donor, and that does take longer than blood donation, but even still, it's 3 hours out of your day, or you can donate blood not even an hour out of your day, and you can save somebody's life by doing that. And I think that that is something that people don't realize either, is how important that is.
And yeah, we've heard that it hurts and you don't like needles and blah, blah, blah. But these kids don't like needles either, but they have to sit there and endure that and yes, get those blood products. And how does that get into them? Well, they have to have a needle first.
So I've heard the news and it makes me really upset because the blood donation numbers are going down. And I feel like it shouldn't be like that. I feel like they should try to find a different way to get blood or something like that that could be the same as blood. Because, like, I get that people don't like needles, but the numbers shouldn't be drastically going down like that.
You're right.
They should be drastically going up.
I think that's why advocacy and platforms like this and talking about how important it is so important, because people like me who don't realize how important it is, like Tiffany was saying, you don't know what you don't know. And
exactly. I've been donating blood since I was 16, but that, I don't know why I've always done that. I've just always had a passion for healthcare and always worked in it. So it, needles don't bother me. So I've just always donated blood. But obviously I do it a lot more regularly now that I've had a child who's needed blood transfusion. So I haven't had to personally have one, but I've had family members have to have blood transfusions, of kids, you know, and it's just whenever you are in the hospital and you have to hear kids screaming from down the hall, why are you doing this to me? While their parents have to hold them down and while the kids don't understand why they have to be going through what they're going through, it will change your entire world. And while you probably don't want to hear about it on this podcast or anywhere else, like, this is what's important. This is what people really live through. And that those things to me are what matter.
You know, Miranda had asked me what was one of the hardest moments for me. And another moment that really sticks out is because of the chemo, Miranda ended up having extremely high blood pressure. But it took us a little while to figure out that that was why Miranda was getting some debilitating headaches. And like crippling, like you couldn't do anything because of the headache. And I remember sitting in the bed with her, and all she could do was cry. And she would say, "Help me, Mama, help me." And there was absolutely nothing that I could do. And those are the moments that break your heart. And ultimately, they piss you off because your child shouldn't be having to go through this. And they are. And as a parent, you want to be the fixer. And yet you have to sit there and there's nothing that you can do to make it better. Those are the moments that stick with you forever. And that you, those are the moments that make me want to advocate more, because I don't want other parents to have to go through what we went through, because it's painful. And you will always be, for us, we will always be before November 29th, 2021 and after November 29th, 2021. Things are never going to go back to the same that they were, even though Miranda is currently cancer-free and we pray that she stays that way forever. Things won't ever go back to the way that they were on November 28th.
There's also, like, another thing. My friends always get mad at me for complaining about everything, but I feel like if I didn't complain so much, no one would know how sick I felt. No one would know all of this different stuff. Like, no one would know I had those headaches, so no one would know about the high blood pressure. No one would know that I wasn't getting better, so no one would know that I had cancer. So I feel like it's just, like, a natural instinct to complain about everything, just in case.
I think that's a great point. Ultimately, though, you fought for your life, and your daddy and I talk about all the time the fact that you didn't complain. You're just, okay, it's chemo day. We're gonna do chemo, or okay, I'm getting blood today, and you know, it's just another day, and you know, you didn't complain about it. And that, I think, is the sad part, is that those days became just another day. It's just another chemo day, because that was what you became used to.
Well, I can promise you that adults complain a lot more than you do. You know, adult chemo is, I would say probably 95% of adult chemo is outpatient, meaning they don't have to be hospitalized. You don't have to stay in the hospital. You don't end up in the hospital. It's all done as an outpatient, but probably 95% of pediatric cancers are admitted to the hospital. And so these are the things that we want to change, that need to change, and new drugs need to be developed. And, you know, Miranda may think she complained a lot, but I can promise you the adults I see every day complain a lot. And not that it's not justified. I mean, it is justified, but I would see these kids walk around the halls hooked up to 15 IV pumps and they're just strolling along. And then I've got, you know, adults who can't handle the mildest form of chemo we have and without, you know, coming in for IV fluids and things like that, which again is justified, but kids are resilient and most kids, you probably wouldn't know that they had cancer unless you see their bald heads or you know, a lot of people assume things that they probably shouldn't.
I feel like the reason that I didn't complain as much as like it would always hurt, I didn't complain that much because you can see it on like my family's face. Like when you or dad would be sad, like you could see it on your face. Or like when my brother would be sad, you could see it. When my grandma would be sad, you could see it on their face. So I didn't want to hurt you guys more because if I complained as much as it hurt, you guys would be sad all the time. And there would be no reason to make you guys sad when I could be the one that has to be sad and not everyone else in my family.
It's crazy that these are the things that our babies think about.
Yeah, that's a harsh reality, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, because whether she complained or not, you know, we're going to be sad. We're going to be sad. There's going to be the good days and the bad days. And I think the really harsh reality is knowing that you're going to meet people on this journey that don't get to cross the finish line with you. And I remember walking up and down the hallway with Miranda, and there was a little girl in one of the rooms, and she was not mobile, even though she was 4 years old, and she was the sweetest thing. And I remember seeing her mom one day, and I remember her mom telling me that they had done an MRI and that the news was not good.
Nothing else they could do.
There was nothing else that they could do. And I knew in that moment what that meant. And Miranda and I don't know at this point if that little girl is still alive or not. But I remember having to tell Miranda when we left that room and we went back to Miranda's room. She was. She kept saying Miranda was so pretty. But I remember Miranda asking me what me and this little girl's mama were talking about and having to tell Miranda that this little girl was going to die, was like a punch in the gut because, you know, these kids spend so much time in this hospital. They make friends with the other kids in the hospital. And to have to tell your, at the time, 11-year-old, that Miranda's about to be 12. That's why.
Oh, she's having a birthday.
She is. But, you know, having to, you know, give her these updates that somebody's not going to make it. Or I remember telling her that one of her friends had relapsed, and I remember when I found out she was spending the night at a friend's house, and I didn't want to tell her until she came home. And I remember she got home, and I remember exactly where she was standing in the middle of the kitchen when I had to tell her that her friend had relapsed. And all she could do was cry and say, is she going to be okay? And all you can do is tell her, I don't know. We're going to pray for her. We're going to pray for her team. But because I know that when Miranda says, is she going to be okay, that means, is she going to live? And that's not a question that I can answer. I think those...
We don't ever want to have to answer that.
Yeah.
To a child.
Yeah. It's hard enough to process as an adult, but those questions, you know, we've made friends and we keep up with them, and it's hard.
I feel like that was one of the reasons that I held it away from you guys, because, like, all those tests and stuff that, like, told them that they relapsed or told them that there was nothing else they could do, like, they're going through all of that. If I'm just going through pain, I don't have to tell you guys. Like, that little girl is not going to live another day, and her mom had to be told that. But I don't have to tell you I'm in pain. You don't have to know. Like, I don't have to make you feel sad over pain.
But you also shouldn't have to be that strong. You shouldn't have to think about things like that.
Well, no one should.
You're
and
right.
It's not fair. But that's just how life is, because the government sucks.
So if you've got one last thing to tell people before this episode ends, what would that be?
People always say never give up. But for me, it was do what you can and make it to the end.
I love that. You know what? Sometimes that's all we can do is put one foot in front of the other and cross that finish line. Thank you for listening, guys. I really appreciate y'all being part of our podcast, and I ask that you just continue to watch and support us. You can always check us out on Facebook, Princess Nora's Warrior Foundation, or norraswarriors.com. We're on all the social medias. You can look us up, message us. We've highlighted Miranda on Warrior Wednesday, and we'll post some more about her here in the show notes. And if you want to read more about her or donate in her honor, we'll get that stuff available for you too. Hope y'all have a great day.